would say is that like there's, I would try, I'm trying not to send you too many emails, and there are all sorts of optional things show up in your course. Just ignore them if you're not interested. But if you're interested, take a look. And one of them answered the question is, yes, there is uncountable group in between countable and Li. So there is a reference, gave you an example. It looks very math, so I wasn't reading very understandably. But yes, there exists. And the other question is about this non-compact Li group. Again, I haven't found that a theorem, but I found a proof. It's also in one of these optional links, as the non-compact Li group don't have finite representations that are unitary. I think that probably they just show up in the math book as theorem 4.5, something like that. But anyway, and Wigner, yes. Wigner we have to do, but also completely optional. So I'll be like, today's class is over, and we'll have questions. And then after all questions condense, and I will be like, if you're still interested in seeing a proof of Wigner theorem, I'll try to show you. Okay? Because after all, I mean, there's a Nobel Prize on it. So that's what I want to say there. And also yesterday I realized that because I was very distracted by the Platonic solids, and I forgot the first rule. I'm so sorry. And the next time, if I'm distracted and I forgot something, please let me know. As you can see, it's happened that I'm very distracted by Platonic solids. So first thing we want to do, so I'm really sorry for the first rule. And on the other hand, we'll tie some loose ends first. So this part, yeah, it's cute. Let's just say that I thought, thinking that I can't resist that I have to tell you a little bit about the Cayley diagram. The you know, the picture book, I said the whole book is just pictures and pictures and pictures, and they prove all sorts of theorem with pictures and pictures. It's so cute. So I cannot resist. And my example would be this triangle that I forgot to talk about it. So this part, I will never ask you in interview, for example. So just look at the cute diagram and say that this guy called Cayley managed to represent group theory, which is very abstract, using a lot of circles and arrows. So let's do this together, and hopefully I get it right. So in order to do this, of course, I have to break the symmetry and make this triangle identifiable a little bit. So if I rotate, if without these dots, it would be exactly the same triangle. So I can't really decipher the relationship between with all these different rotations and the flips and the stuff. So there are some dots. So step one, if you want to do a Cayley diagram, is to break your symmetry such that you can label what you have. So I'll just say, well, label it as 1, 2, 3. Yeah? But I have to remember this. I always do this corner first, and this corner, and that corner. Like this labeling cannot change. This is like a label mechanism. Once set, that's how we will do. And the step two is to do some symmetry things, operations, and see what happens. So the idea is I have 1, 2, 3. That's this triangle. Now it's just numbers, 1, 2, 3. And I can rotate it clockwisely, right? Rotation clockwise will give me something. And this thing is labeled as 2, 3, 1. And we can do it again. This will give me 3, 1, 2. Yeah? And I do one more time, I go back. And the other symmetry we know about this triangle is we can flip it. I'm going to have another arrow says I'm flipping. And that will give me 1, 3, 2. And of course I can still do this rotation. I got 3, 2, 1. So I come to here. The reason I want to come here, not the other side, because then they can be linked by a flip. Yeah? It's like drawing helicogram is a lot of mine is struggling with how to arrange these circles, how to draw the lines so that it looks most symmetrical or pretty, but I don't think that. Anyway, we can continue do our rotation. Here we get, hopefully this is not surprising to anybody, but this is 2, 1, 3. And hopefully it's clear that we're gonna go get back. And that's all the things we can do with this triangle that make it remain a triangle at the fixed location. And the Kaylee says, oh great, now we can just put the triangle aside and it says, that thing describe the group. And like, why? So for example, if you look at this, this is easily generalizable. You can just cut a line and then write a bunch of dots. Says, we'll just do this, except then we'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then you see this diagram summarized basically so-called the symmetry of the polygon. Like a square or something has 5 or a hex or anything. And mathematician is very happy with this result. Says that deserves a name. So instead, in addition to the C series that describe a cyclic operation, and now you have a D series that describe that this is really a N. The full name is called a dihedral group. I hope I got that right. But really, it's a group of N polygon. So it's kind of interesting. And Dan comes in and says, can you tell them the story that I was like, oh, sure. The story is that I was learning about all this Cayley diagram and the polygons. I was like, the simplest case should be N equals 1. Why we start not start 1? And the polygon, if N equals 1, we become a unigon. And that's how we name things, right? In English. And I was like, huh, what is unigon? I was like, Google, what is unigon? And Google says, unigon is a mystical creature that is a hybrid between unicorn and a dragon. And Dan got me the shirt for one of like a birthday gift. Says, you should always teach about this wearing the shirt. All right, I will always feel that. So that's the thing aside, you don't have to know anything about, you know, dihedral group in any sense, but it's interesting. Okay, yes, now we're ready to start. Okay, I always want to start with this big question, because this is really the goal for us, for including yesterday, 4 lectures. So I really want to remind you, this is what we want to do. And yesterday, we made some accomplishment. Well, okay. That accomplishment is made by Wigner afterwards, but it's described by some unitary linear operator. branches and the unit, etc. But then we realize this thing form a group. And yesterday we see some groups. Right? I think if I want to summarize yesterday, what did we do? We saw some groups, especially the rotation ones. Real plane, complex plane, we got really familiar with those. And we'll get more and more familiar with them. But the point is how to study a group. I mean, yeah, see, it's very nice, the mathematicians abstracted things so that we don't have to, you know, hold a bunch of objects in our hand and study this, that, that, that. Abstract things have their advantage. But, so now, forget about all the symmetrical object we have. Now we have this. A list of things come with a binary operator. So how do we study them? So the question is there, sometimes, you know, people call this binary operator multiplication a little misleading because number multiplication is naturally a billion commute. But for a group, commute is very nice, but then we don't learn the deep things like SU2. So is there anything at all that has a multiplication defined, has an identity, has an inverse? It's associative, not always commutative, and acting on a vector. That comes from here. We want it to act in a Hilbert space, so we definitely want this thing to act on a vector. Yeah? What do you learn in the past as this interesting object? Louder. Matrices. It seems matrices just fits the bill. And also it's linear algebra. We know linear algebra. Well, I would say we know linear algebra better than algebra. So the idea is that if we can somehow represent these abstract G things by matrix, and you're like, what kind of matrix? If you think about it, we have to multiply together. They gotta be square matrix. So here we go. M is the dimension of the matrix. We get some square matrix. Dali, 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 they are all represented. And because R is very, I don't know, R is like a rotation. It's already chosen. So this interesting letter D shows up, and I interpret that Weinberg wants me to say it's a description. It's like we use these matrices to describe the group. And the thing is, but I only did one thing. I assigned a vector matrix to the set. Let me tell you that the one more important thing about a group is this part, is how things are related. Otherwise, I can put my tea mug and water bottle in the set. They don't form a group. So the important thing is this thing, and we're gonna represent them with matrices. And I'll stop writing the M by M. It's some square matrix. And this one is represented by this guy. And now we can happily forget about these, I don't know, center dot or whatever. Because matrix multiplication, you don't need anything to indicate it. You write two matrix next to each other, they're multiplied. And then what do you think we should get in the right? If it's a good description. Right. A good description will maintain the relationship, maintain this group multiplication, also known as binary operator. So the one thing I want to say now is that this when this is established, then you happily call this thing a dimension M. Rep stands for representation. And M stands for many choices. You can have many choices of this M by M. But dimension of the group itself, this is unique. Remember, this is a, I'm depending on this theta angle, some other theta angle, and some other theta angle that I just count. 1, 2, 3. That has nothing to do with all this representation or description. This is what happens afterwards. We got this fixed. It's some unique number for every single group. But for this dimension, it's really, you have many choices. And we'll explore those choices later. Yeah.
So we have many choices corresponding to the many M choices, the dimension of the vector space.
Yes.
But if we fix M and we're in one vector space, how many choices do we have?
Oh, that's a very good question. Sometimes you only have one, sometimes you can have two. It really depends on, well, we are actually almost getting there, okay? That's a very, very good question. And so about this is that if it's distinct, people call it faithful. And if it's not distinct, then it's not faithful. But see, you can always find a not faithful representation. You just say, I'll send everything to identity. Ta-da! Works. I'm sure all this multiplication works, but kind of useless. So we are really like to focus on the faithful ones, the one really for every single this group object in the set, we assign a distinct matrix. And the next thing I want to say is regarding David's question. So suppose we pick a dimension, as he says, and we found a representation, and then we found another representation. They are both dimension M. The idea is, if for any, we can find some invertible matrix such that, I'm very proud of all this abbreviations in math I'm using, such that it works. This reads as I have some matrix that's invertible. And if two representations are connected by this for every single group element. You've probably seen this before. It's called the similar transformation. That's exactly what I meant. What we meant here is that it's a similar. A similar means these two representations are actually equivalent. The other one didn't give us any new information. Why? Okay, you ask yours first.
How is the product of S and D defined? Because S is an elliptic group and D is
a... Oh, no, sorry. I'm so sorry. This is the M. It's a matrix. So this is also a matrix. And this is the group. Thank you. Yeah, it wouldn't make any sense. So, very good. Why? Why they are equivalent? By using a similar transformation, what exactly we did? Think about the vector space. If you act S on the vector space, I mean, these are all matrices, right? Matrices have to act on some vector space. And we have this vector, 1 by m, and then we have this thing. This is the M times M matrix acting on it. So what exactly we're doing? Suppose this thing is actually a unit vector. And we decide to add some s on it. And we pick another vector in some other direction, and we're acting on by s. So what exact? So I'm saying that if they are basis vectors, and they all be together act upon by some matrix.
Change of basis.
You change your basis. But the basis is very arbitrary things. Maybe some bases are nicer than other bases, but a changing basis is not giving us any different physics. So that's what this equivalent definition says. That if you're just changing the basis of the vector space, I wouldn't count you as a unique representation. So now back to your question. So what, of course, my Spanish does is like say, oh, very good. I have all the equivalent class, and they found all the representation. And says these are equivalent, and then they really search for all of them, and then they count how many unique ones they have, how many class they have. Sometimes, well, I know example of one, I know example of two. Actually, I'm not sure I know example of three. So maybe I should figure that out. I'll just go jump in front of Latham. Do you know any representation of three of the same dimension? He knows everything about the group theory and everything like beyond that. But very good. So basically, what we want to do is that we have this maybe gigantic representation. And now we have this gigantic vector. And maybe, just maybe, that you are able to find that these similar matrices such that they look less complicated. You know, that everything outside of these squares are zero. See, that's certainly less complicated than everything is not zero. And then you can continue look for that for these S, this similar transformation, such that you are unable to turn these squares into smaller squares. And that's what we called a reducible representation, and it goes to a irreducible representation. So what do you do with this is just keep searching for all your S until they are all as block diagonal as ever possible. Okay, in principle. In reality, we'll use different ways to find the EREP. But this is very interesting. So we actually want to go back to this. And what it's telling to us is this thing is not just a general state. We can cut them into little pieces and study how little pieces transform, because block diagonal means they're not going to talk to each other. Once you're in this rep, there's no group action will bring you out. So see, we're getting close. We realize this is not as complicated as we think. So that's what I want to say about the representation, the description. Well, I said that if we want to study it, we'd better provide some ways, and the way is called the representation. And now we're actually going to use it. Okay? And what we're going to use it to do is, okay, I have said it, but I think it's really worth emphasizing, is that what is important about the group? Group is a set of objects that has a binary operator. What is more important?
Wait, can you repeat the question.
So I want to ask, in the following group definition, which part is more important? And the group definition I provide you is that it's a set of objects and a binary operator.
The operator.
It tells us the relationship between all these objects. Otherwise, it's just a set. Okay, so that's why I feel the following task we're facing is going to be one of the tougher ones. But I can't resist myself to tell you what I learned from Freddie, actually, about the structure of the group. And I also feel that it's, yeah, I just can't say, I taught something on group theory, but I never told them about the structure. Yeah. So today's goal is the structure of group. Okay, so why is it called the structure? Because we're actually going to try to learn everything we can from that binary operator. So let me write down things I need. Oh, here. I have some interesting notation because I basically exhausted all the, you know, Greek letters, Latin letters, and everything on the superscript. So I wish I could just teach you guys Chinese. then we have an infinite amount of index. But that's very hard for me to keep writing Chinese. So sure, I'll teach you some Chinese after that too. But put that aside, I really don't want you to think this upper index is running through something, because normally they are. They're like running through the dimension of group, running through the dimension of a representation, running through this, that. I really don't. They don't. They are just a random group member I snatched off the set. So I'm going to label it as triangle. So triangle is just a label, says this is going to be different from the next thing I write up. And this is the least of parameters. And then what we want to study is this dot member and the triangle and the circle. Yeah, I don't want to mistaken you that that's a square or that's an index. So it's not an index. It's just I grabbed one group member, grabbed another, and this is what's the result. Okay? And those are just there to say this G is different from that G and from that. So we'll stick with this because a lot of things. Okay. So then I say this is this parameter set, and this is this parameter set, and this, so the tilde just means they secretly has, you know, dimension n, the group dimension, amount of parameters. But I'm not writing it up. But see, I'll make the following claim. Since this group member, the dot one, depends on the dot parameters, so the triangular depends on triangular ones, and the circle ones depend on circle ones. So I claim there got to be one way, somehow, that this is a function of the other two. Yeah, makes sense? And of course, this f tilde, which just tells us that the result is also a set of parameters. It's not a single function. And this f tilde is our structure. If you figure out how this parameters depends on the other two parameters, yeah, that's the structure of the group. It tells exactly how the binary operator operates. Oh, let me tell you. it's very hard to figure out what's this F. But we have, sometimes I just like Freddy's way of saying things. Freddy says we will have some enlightening observations. The first observation is if I send every parameter goes to zero, what do you think F is? That's the group member. Group member is identity. What is the parameter?
Zero.
Also zero.
That's fairly true.
This one says E times E equals E.
What if it's not necessarily, what if it's not going to be a multiplication? Like it could be something else. Like you could have kind of addition of sorts and then, yeah, you could have addition and then you could have it also dependent on like plus one and then.
Yeah, that's true. But all of those are special cases of a group. For any generic group that I have never specified, this is always true. You always have binary operator acting on two identity would always give you identity.
Okay, so if zero is representing our identity, okay, that's better.
Right, so it's, you can choose something else to be identity, is just not very convenient. So we are gonna stick with the idea is you have all parameter to be zero, then you are identity.
Wait, can I just?
Yeah.
This might be a very naive question, but I know intuitively why the phi tilde dot should be a function of phi tilde O.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of thinking after the multiplication,
yeah,
there might be new parameters coming out of thin air. Why not? I mean, if someone says that, just prove to me that we don't have new parameters for the phi tilde dot.
Well, if you have some new parameter coming out, this is a deterministic like a relationship. It is that this F tilde. So, but like my point is, there's no other information. You didn't provide me a G smiling face. If you didn't provide me one, why would I expect this?
I mean, it's not possible that we have a G smiley face thing,
yeah,
that is
that
in all of our functions, and if we put a phi tilde smiley face on every function of this sort that we write. I mean, and it has constraints,
mm-hmm,
in which we say, okay,
yeah,
these are zero,
mm-hmm,
and zero,
right?
But still, there's a functionality there.
Yeah, but if you're telling me this is a global thing, normally we just do some translation and then toss them, right? If you say this is different for every J dot I choose, then that's a different question. Like you're telling me it's a global thing, every single function depends this way to this, then there's got to be some mathematical way you can make it not dependent. It's like choosing this as origin, choosing that as origin, and that one can always be shifted. That's how I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even if phi tilde triangle and phi tilde circle are not zero,
yeah,
but phi tilde dot is zero, then the function should be zero. What I mean to say is, if phi tilde triangle and phi tilde circle are zero,
yeah,
then F can be anything because a function of only zero equals
zero. That's exactly. Okay, good. You have even stronger points. Forget about group theory. If you have a function depends on zero and zero, you're not getting anything else. Perfect. So you have the second way of telling us why this has to be zero, and this doesn't even have to do with anything about group theory. That's perfect. So now, we'll do even more enlightening thoughts. What if I take this to be zero? It should be the other one. And this time we do have to use the group theory information, because from math, we only know it's a function of this. It's really going back to look. This one says G equals G dot E. So you will have to get the other one. And nothing not functional. Okay. And well, I hope this is not surprising. If I take the other one to be zero, then this is going to be this, right? If you kill the one, you are down to this. Then it's the same group member, they are the same parameters. So this global dependence on dot is on the third thing, the smiley face might not go work quite well with this. Because you want to satisfy this. And these are very enlightening observations. Very enlightening. How do I remember this? I just really need to find this board later. So. And okay, I have no idea how these boards work. That's established. And so then we'll be like, yeah, we know nothing beyond that. What do? Well, we learned this new tool called the reps. We're going to just write the reps and see if there is anything going to help us. And remember, these are all matrices. And this one says, this is basically F tutor. So equals
maybe it's just me, but it's very difficult for me to keep track of the triangles and circles. Could we maybe use ABC or something? And then this might just
okay, how about a mushroom? No, I can't, because if I use ABC, then it mix up with the index. The index of either rep, the index that I run from 1 to n, which is the group. Dimension of group is what we use for A. Okay, now they become mushrooms. from this onward. this is very distinguishable.
How did you drive the second line exactly?
Because this is depend on this. This depends on, it's like F is dependent on J, G is dependent on X, then F must be dependent on X.
Yeah, but why is this a multiplication of the representation of the parameters that gives the?
No, I'm just saying that this is a very bad notation, but this is saying that the matrix that it depend on these parameters.
Okay, so it's not the same as saying DG.
No, this is saying give me a group member, I can find a matrix for it. Yeah. But you can say, give me a bunch of parameters, I can find you a group member from the group member, I can find the rep, and then I just erase the whatever happens in the middle.
So basically, this is the notation here is D brackets G dot brackets F tilde.
Exactly. Exactly. Here is what it truly is. And I just kind of erased whatever is there. And it's still too ambitious. Like finding this F tutor is a very ambitious thing, but we have these enlightening observations. So what should we do if we're stuck and then we're too ambitious? And the finite things are so ambitious. Trying to figure out what, like if a phi tutor is a finite angle pi over 4 or other angle, it's too ambitious. What do we normally do?
Because
Huh? Finite things are ambitious. What are not ambitious? What are less ambitious and are possibly achievable?
Finite things are more ambitious?
No, no, no. I meant the finite parameters. So if you are rotating pi over 2, that's more ambitious than rotating, say, 0.0000001.
Oh, we take that to like an infinitesimal little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's take the infinitesimal bit. So let's take a infinitesimal parameter, not surprising, it's epsilon. And we are going to expand around the epsilon tilde equals 0, which is identity.
This will be true only for D groups,
right? Oh, sorry. From a certain point onward, I only consider Lie group. Sorry. Yeah, this course will not worry about a finite group. Not too much. See, this is the A, that A goes from 1 to N. And the N is the dimension of the group, which tells us how many parameters are there. And this is fixed. You gave me a Lie group, that N is fixed. And but this, you have many choices.
God, epsilon, is that just a like a coefficient, or is it kind of like a well, there's only one index, so it can't be the
generator, so to speak.
Oh, it's like a tiny bit, right? Okay.
So this is the tiny bit, and I'm expanding my matrix with this tiny bit, but then it's no longer a matrix. So I must have something carrying the matrix index so that it's still a matrix. And these are the things that are carrying the matrix index and is called the generators. And we call it the generators is because it generates. The idea is once you have, this is not easy to do, but in principle, doable. So, this is the definition of a exponential. So this is the limit. If you replace this by just x, replace all this x, it'll give you e to the x. It's a calculus fun fact that I don't remember how to prove anymore. But the point is this is really not well defined. It's only defined through this infinite limit. You chop your finite step into infinite step, and you're like, I know how to do one step. And then you take all those steps. But then they claim that as soon as I know how to do infinitesimal things, I will be able to find a generic group member. Yeah.
Are the generators functions of the coordinates epsilon tilde?
Generators are not, because the coordinates are taken out. And we're only doing linear expansion.
So at any point in the on the path phi a,
yeah,
we will always have the same generators. The a.
Yes. Yeah. The generators can. Should they commute? Oh my God! You just review. You asked the question that I want to say at like really 12:10. So please hold on your curiosity about these generators, and eventually I'll tell you about these generators. Like, that's really a question that I can only answer after we work through the next half of the lecture. which, speak of which, let's take a 5-minute break and resume at 42. Okay, we need to start. And I hear many good questions. And I'll stay on this. Yeah? Huh? What did DeFi do?
I still don't understand why it doesn't matter how you define the generators. Because if you define a particular generator for each particular parameter, and you have the multiplications of the summation terms.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you just interchange the summation terms, you get a different result. Wouldn't you?
You are not supposed to change them. You're supposed to follow this order. Nobody is telling you you are supposed to change the orders.
Where do you get the order in the first place?
Each factor is the same because after you do the sum, you just get a matrix. So you're just multiplying 1 plus that matrix multiple times.
Yes, that's great. That's exactly what I'm trying to say, is that they are matrices. So when you multiply matrices, unless we are instructed, we shouldn't change them, the order. And we'll see how much more things we can say about these generators, which is basically what are we gonna do the rest of the lecture.
Sorry, yeah. I think Ali's question is really like, okay, so we have parameters that relate to our, we don't know what order those parameters are. They're just parameters.
Right.
Like maybe rotations, you could have one rotation this way and one rotation this way. So there's no real specific order there. But we have a TA corresponding to one of them, and a TB corresponding to the other rotation, and we don't have a set. We have to set an order first, and then do the rest of it. But
not really, because the order you mentioned is within the sum. When you're summing, we can change the order of matrix. It's only when you multiply we count.
You have e to the I phi a t a, right? This sum up there, because that's a, you know, the sum.
Yeah.
The e, that's a.
To this e?
Yeah. When you have that sum, because you have the summation notation, right, with the repeated in.
Yeah.
The e, the sum in exponent.
Yeah.
It's a multiplication, so you can't necessarily commute them, and so the order does matter even over there.
But this thing's not defined. This thing is defined. Let's just say fancily, we write this as this. We have no idea what this is.
Okay, I might have a much simpler problem.
Yeah.
What are the limit of into the infinity 1 plus, where did the summation come from exactly? For an infinitesimal action on the.
It's just like,
what is summation? This summation?
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a summation there. It's just the Einstein thing.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, what is that generator of the of a small action on the?
The only thing we've done so far. Forget about generators. We don't know what the generators are. What we do is we take a matrix, expand it around the origin, and there is some infinitesimal parameter, and there are some matrices. Like this is Taylor expansion in a matrix. If I know it's close to identity, I can expand this way.
Why is epsilon equal to phi a over mta, the summation over there?
Because it's not. It says if a phi is finite, I can always cut it into infinite pieces. Then each of them will, it's not the same. It's just some other small things. I'm just claiming if I know how to do small things, I can do these small things infinite times to get to the finite. Yeah, there must, like, sorry, I didn't emphasize. In no way, that thing equals that thing. The phi a over n equals some other small things. They are not the same. Okay, very good. There are many, many discussion around these generators because maybe they are really important. And really important. We are basically spending the entire lecture today to discuss these generators. So then, DJ noticed that there isn't an I in the definition. You're like, why there is an I definition? Yeah, it's called the physicist definition. If you look at a math book, the I is not. So it's completely arbitrary at this point. And let's see why physicists do that. So we will indulge ourselves with a slightly more special rep and assume it's unitary. It's just if. It's a big if. But I would like to. So then you have this unitary condition, and we can do some expansion. Yeah, I'm just writing this down because it's like copy-pasting, and put some minus sign and put some dagger. And now can we stare at this and tell me what can we conclude about the generators?
Yeah. They're Hermitians.
They are Hermitian. Well, that's why physicists are very excited about this I, and says if we have that I there, then they are Hermitian. And a Hermitian means what in physics?
We have the unitary operator.
Yeah. If it's a Hermitian, then we can
conjugate transpose. We just wrote that.
Uh-huh. So yes?
The exponential is unitary.
Yeah, but then we go back. So forget about the group theory. What a Hermitian tell me in physics?
It's observable.
Yes! And then you can see why physicists are very excited about this. They are observables. And let me remind you that something you learn in quantum mechanics says, here is a unitary operator. Time evolution. It's governed by the Hermitian Hamiltonian. Right? That's where, you know, physicists says, let's put the I there. Okay, here we go. Now it's the time that we need to conquer this task called F tutor. And we still don't know much about it, but the idea is we just did the first order expansion. Guess what? Where are we going with this? Yeah? Order number one, done. If we're lucky, we get observable. And what I should say in the next one. Makes sense. I know, nobody wants to go there, but. Okay. So there is going to be our little generators. And there's going to be another term. Yeah, you know, for the same reasoning, I'm just doing Taylor expansion. LABs is some other matrices. Now, some of you told me you have a little bit of group theory, like background. I've never heard about this, the LAB. Why? It's there. So, the next thing is to get this F tutor. We shall expand it into second order. And I'll give you 5 minutes to think about it. Well, okay, I'll give you 3 minutes to think about it and 2 more minutes to discuss, to tell me exactly how I should expand this thing.
Is that F like the same as F tilde, or is that just F?
It's the same, but now it has an index to tell me that it's the each component. Okay. It's like you have an array of parameters, and now I would just like, oh, what about a component one?
Okay, that makes sense.
I don't know. At this point, the only thing I can say is I can force this to be symmetric. Yeah? That? Okay, no, I'm serious. Please think. First, I'll give you some instruction. First, think. Just forget about it's our structure function. Just saying, how do I expand to, all right, David, you have a point. And how do I expand any function of two sets of parameters to second order? Don't think about a group theory. I have a function, it's a function of two sets of very teeny parameters. Think about how many terms you're gonna get. There are a bunch, okay? I want you to do that first. Now I want you to talk to each other. And I want people who didn't volunteer yesterday to tell me the answers.
Okay, I think it's 5 terms.
Oh, sorry, there's 1 minute of talking. one minute of talking time.
I think you're right. These are all the instrumentations, right? So like, it's just like two different.
All right.
Oh, you have a partial start. You have a partial.
Someone tell me something about this expansion. Yeah?
Okay, I think it's 5 terms because it should be 6, but we know that f of 0 is 0.
Ah.
So we don't have a first order.
Uh-huh.
2 terms for the epsilon order.
Uh-huh.
3 terms of e squared order.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm going to write it in a way that it match with what I have in my hand. So that's the 5 term that we have. So. So now I want you to think about with our enlightening observation. Actually, Irini already used the first enlightening observation. Now you have 2 more to use. So can we do anything with that beast? Okay, now you have 2 minutes. 2 minutes to work on your own and 1 minute to discuss. And these are the things I want you to look at. So to combine this thing in this big circle and say if there's anything we can do about this crazy things.
DBA and CBA are one.
Identity.
Huh?
We don't have identity.
Well, according to Irini, that
it goes to 0.
Can I ask something?
Our question is 0.
Quietly.
When the non mushroom O1 is 0. So, and when that one is 0, we have the non mushroom one is. Okay, so we have the five tailed mushroom thing.
Uh-huh.
And five-tailed mushroom thing is 1. Because five-tailed mushroom 1 is here, epsilon tilde. You're taking the derivative of epsilon with respect to epsilon?
No.
Is it 1? Or is it 0?
Which term?
BBA and CBA.
Yeah. That's what I'm asking you to.
Yeah, because of the.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm asking you to do. Kind of, you did it.
Oh, okay.
But think about the rest of terms. Some of the rest of terms is also interesting.
Oh, just the
Okay, time to talk. talk to each other?
No, they're not the same thing.
So those coordinates, they're just coordinates on the...
They're just
the
coordinates on the parameter.
On the parameter.
Yeah.
And so there should be some coordinates.
And this is all...
The only thing I require is I fix 0 to be the identity.
Yeah.
Then, but I can run very fast along a curve, along my coordinates, or I can run maybe very slowly. Like there should be some redundancy on the sort of like a chart.
Well, can we come back to, does it work for you one or you need more parameters? Okay, let's just say we have one parameter, say theta mod theta, go from 0 to 2 pi.
Yeah, we can run from 0 to 2 pi.
We can run twice as fast or four times as fast.
Yeah, okay.
And so we have a lot of
transitions of the
and all of them should,
in some sense, do everything that we're just doing now.
Yeah, but the curve is the only related to the position of the parameter. We don't think, we think the group at the group element, the dependence on the parameter doesn't depend on the velocity.
Because, for example, in chart, when you have
in that case,
you can get non-zero parameter, that depends on the velocity that you use, depending on your parameter, right? I was wondering, since we're doing computation, if there are some like terms that can be eliminated just as we did with
zero. Okay, this has to we have to talk later. DR stuff.
The circle.
No, this is a very good question because I have never heard about DR stuff when I teach group theory. Okay, there's gotta be enough time. Somebody who haven't volunteered, please tell me something. You don't have to tell me everything.
BBA is one, CBA is one. DBCA is 0, and
why is this?
You're taking the derivative of f 0 0 0.
No, that's the second derivative of f.
Yeah.
F is 0, but the second derivative of the f is not. Okay, the first thing we realize from this is that if you take one out, it should be the other thing. So really, there's not much dependence here. And I should just write this as delta and the delta all 1, right? The linear, because we already did the linear expansion, or any expansion should just go back to itself. OK, what else can we say? Huh? F and B, E will be 0, because if you take the circle equals 0, this will still there, and this does not look like a single triangle. So you're like, oh, it wasn't that bad after all. There's like two things, we know they exist, plus this new thing. I thought it would be a heart attack, but not. Very good. Let's. I'll just write down what this thing truly is. Truly, it's just the first parameter plus the second parameter plus this, let's say, cross term. And that's really it. It is. F is this. what can we say anything more? Right? Well,
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand.
Yeah.
There were two, because you have two mushroom things and you only
one mushroom.
One mushroom.
That's right. We are guaranteed to have one mushroom. One mushroom stands alone like a cheese.
What?
Well, cheese stands alone, right? I don't know. Ask Dan. I'm not an English speaker. Okay, so then there's some slightly more laborious work, but this is the sweet stuff. So I'll just kind of hand wave to you, because what we're gonna do is this D triangle times, okay, mushroom times circle equals dot thing, right? And you'll be like, seriously, am I really going to do this? Okay, so that's the seriously that I hope you do it. But see, that's the first, it's, I'm just copying things. There's nothing interesting going on. I'm just saying that, so as I said, I'm being very, very sloppy and forget about the all index and write it like that, okay? Because it's gonna take longer, but the result is not as important as that. Once you get what's F tilde, you just plug it in. And oh, but I can try to hand wave. My hand wave is that, you know, zero's order cancel. First order cancel, that was guaranteed in the expansion in the first order. And the only thing, wait, first order, yeah. So first order cancel, and then the only thing we need to pay attention to is the second order. And then remember secretly in this F, there is a term like this, that term, yeah? So that's our second order. And all the other second order, well, sorry, there's one more important second order, which is hiding here. Yeah, first order times first order gives second order. So we're gonna expect a D show up. We're gonna expect a T times T show up. And everything else is in L. And if you look at it carefully, okay, look at it carefully, a bunch of things cancel, and I'll write the result of that thing. And this result, I'm sorry for using this board, but I don't want to erase anything. The result is, not tall enough. Result is this. Yeah, as advertised, there's some D come out, and there's some TATP come out, and there's something else. Yeah? I mean, this takes a lot of thought of understanding the group theory, understanding the structure to get that line. This is algebra. So we are not going to do it, but I'll just try to convince you, you're going to get something like this. Is that okay? And you were like, huh, what do I do with this?
I think.
What do I do with the L? It's a symmetric. It's a symmetric. So I can switch them. So I'm gonna write you one more line. And the only difference between these two lines is I switched A and B. Oh, that line doesn't have a mind. Okay, so this is you one through that to get. But the first line, I just say, I don't know LAB. Actually, no, nobody knows. But it doesn't matter. They are symmetric. If I switch and I subtract, they will drop off. And we arrive at this. And people like to call these coefficients FABC. F stands for the function. And this is one of the most important results in Lie group, because that defines a Lie algebra. And so I should have modified my goal. Structure constant of the. And as I promised, I'm a little late, promised, we see the commutator. And the first question is, can they be all zero, all the structure constants all zero? Of course. That just means we have an abelian group. It all commutes. And then, and it's all called an algebra because remember we gave up commutativity to get to a group. Like it doesn't have to commute anymore. And now we gave up associativity. It doesn't have to be associative.
What is not associative?
The Lie algebra. The commutator is also a binary operator. And that binary operator is not associative. For a very good reason, because there's something called the Jacobi identity. Jacobi identity. I'm not going to write T because it doesn't matter. It's anything, as long as you're taking commutator. And this really tells us there's no way this thing's going to be associative unless you have a bunch of zeros. Okay, I have a few comments. Technically, I still have 5 minutes because our break is 4 minutes longer somehow. Okay, I think like this says that if I the only thing I need to study is that. Because the group is just this doing some very hard exponential. Not a well-defined exponential, but anyway, that's finite. We know what it looks like right around identity. It looks like that. And my first comment is that this is determined by the group. Not a dependent, has nothing to do with representation. You have the same structure constant for, you know, all this. Dimension 2 rep, dimension 5 rep, dimension 15 rep, doesn't matter. That's the same structure constants, and it tells us how the group looks like. Near identity, also known as the algebra. And on the other hand, it doesn't depend on the group, because we only look next to the identity. If your group is have something else not next to the identity, like all the SO, SU group, if you are O or U group, you would have no idea about the not next identity, the determinant. Like remember, we always set the determinant goes to one, so that we're next to the identity. But if you're not in some other branch, then it's something else.
But O and U groups are also Lie groups, right?
Huh?
O and U are also
Lie. Yeah, they are. And they share the same Lie algebra. That what I'm trying to say is O and an S O and share exactly the same Lie algebra. By looking at the algebra, you would have no idea what group it comes from, because they share the same. And the next thing is, it's unique, almost, of course, up to change basis. We have matrices. They are acting on some vector space. When that happens, you change vector space. then of course you get a different structure constant. And then we'll say, okay, those are equivalent structure constant in the same way as we say those are equivalent reps. And that's all I want to say, and the question. Unless you are super excited about a Wigner. And then we can talk about Wigner. But the first, I guess, you people can ask questions about the structure constants, generators, and I hope that I answered your question. If they commute, they gave a billion group. If they don't, they have this thing called a structure constant. And that is almost telling us everything we want to know about a Lie group. The rep? Oh, that's what we're going to do on Friday. Right. I mean, so what? We have the structure. It just so far it's just telling you that these are different groups, and the thing we really need to do, and we really can claim triumph, is to find this D thing for all the T's. Remember, T's are generators. Although I did it with a certain rep, say M by M, but T can be anything by anything. Remember, M stands for many choices. So on Friday, we'll finally conquer the Lie group by study a very famous representation of SU2. Even better, we study all of it. And even better, if you study all of it, in principle, you have a recipe to really get the rep of all the, it may not be easy, but you have a recipe to follow. So this is how I'm going to get all the reps for all groups. Yep.
I have two questions. Where did the minus sign go in the ABC when we flipped?
Oh, yeah, sorry. That was just my mistake. So the second line is supposed to be.
So we subtract.
Yeah. It's just, this is a add-in subtraction.
And the second question is, the non-associativity is when we are defining the product to be a commutation.
Yes.
Not the group.
No. It's just, exactly. That's why that it's basically algebra is all the requirement of group and delete the associativity. And here we go.